So where was I 20 years ago? I was also coming out of graduate school, out of Columbia, and was arriving in Washington with a brand new advanced degree. And of course, Columbia at the time, the program I went through, didn't have an international energy program. So I made one up. So I had a degree that I cobbled together in energy policy and in Middle Eastern studies, and came into the US government through the Presidential Management Fellows program and wanted to work on energy security. But there wasn't any place to do that. You know, keep in mind that the price of oil at the time was pretty low. And so, you know, the question was, why would you care about that? So I went to work at the Department of Defense and in the Middle East office. So most of my career has been in and out of the Department of Defense ever since. And so I've had a chance to see how the Pentagon looks at these issues and has changed on these issues over time. And definitely, you know, the Woodrow Wilson Center's program played a role in changing that dialogue. So, I mean, I was arriving for that first time right after the Cold War ended. And the Pentagon, we knew what we were in the Cold War, and we knew what our job was, and we knew what our focus was. We knew what we were organizing, training, and equipping for. And that's the legal responsibility of the Department of Defense, to organize, train, and equip for the defense of the country. But once that went away, and you know, the what are you solving for became a more complicated question, the answer became more complicated. The intelligence community, the defense community, the answer started to get more complicated. And I think there was a lot of reliance on this program to help inform those discussions. So you get to the point now where the Department of Defense's signature strategy document, the Quadrennial Defense Review, talks about demographic change and talks about environmental change, talks about energy security, talks about water and what it means for security. The National Intelligence Strategy just came out yesterday, and there's a section on natural resources in that. So I think that the security agencies of our government understand that these issues influence security. Where it gets more interesting is then what? So they understand that it's in the overall strategic landscape, the security context, that these are all the influences that determine security in a very basic, broadest sense. Are you safe? Are you safe in your home? Are you going to pick up a weapon? Are you going to move? Are you going to destabilize a region that destabilizes us? They understand that all those questions have to be asked. It's the then what that gets more complicated. And I'm not sure that's a bad thing, because the truth is there's not always a military answer to a security challenge. And I think that's where the evolution of this program has been very interesting. And that's still a very live question. I mean, just yesterday, I was telling my husband in the car, and he's an environmental engineer, for context, what I was coming to do today. And we just happened to hear, right when I said that, a snippet of President Obama saying that Ebola was a national security threat and that we were sending military forces to deal with it. And my husband had a really strong reaction, and he doesn't usually follow these issues that closely. And he said, that's not a national security threat. I mean, it's dangerous. It's something we have to deal with. It, you know, it's something that I worry about, but it's not national security. And I said, well, it all depends on, you know, what is security? Is security getting our kids to school and food on the table, and what prevents us from doing that? And then that broader context, or are you talking about military security and defense threats that require a weapon to counter? You know, and he kind of looked at me and I said, and that's what that event's going to be about. So this debate in some ways has gotten a lot more data rich, a lot more really, truly gifted and interesting people, including all these folks at the table. The discussions got more rich, but the basic questions are the same. And I would say the Department of Defense has joined that discussion, but still the then what, as far as how does that inform what weapons you need or where your forces are or what your relationships are with other countries. You know, you have the commander of Pacific Command saying climate change is a major threat in my region, but then what? So what's his responsibility to deal with it and counter it? That's still a hard question to answer, and you still don't see that kind of throughput, and that's not all bad. It's an interesting thing about working in the Department of Defense, because it's a massive agency that has a $700 billion budget, and 200, give or take, of that is focused on fighting wars right now. A lot of refugees right now, right? And we have a great deal of difficulty. They're not environmental refugees, depending on how you look at Syria. So DoD is this massive agency with this big footprint and can get things done. And we work on an interesting set of timelines, because we work on right now, and it's all consuming. How do you deal with ISIS? How do you deal with Ebola? How do you use military assets to carry out the wishes of political leadership in the country? And that's very consuming. And then we have a one-year budget cycle. But we also have a five-year plan for that budget. We have to explain what we're going to do with that money over 5 years. And then we have a 40-year time horizon, basically, because that's how long it takes. In 20, 40 years, that's how long it takes to build a weapons system and to design a military force and make sure that you have the people you need. So that's why you get things like this scenario exercise, this war game, where you get military planners trying to think in those terms about where might we be 20 years from now or 40 years from now, where you have the democratization of highly destructive weapons and the increasing autonomous nature of weapons systems. What's that going to look like, and what do we need to live in that world? Because if we don't start building it now, we won't have it. So it is very much the way the department works, and that is why we play those games. But it's still hard sometimes to connect that strategic vision with the means and how you get there, particularly when you're talking about complexity, because DoD still doesn't have a great way to manage that complexity either. It's funny, I had a conversation with a senior former DoD leader at one point where he was telling me that energy wasn't really a security issue. And I can tell you ways that there are. You know, if you're in a combat outpost in Afghanistan and people are dying bringing you fuel, needing less fuel has a very strong military return, right? So that energy security in that sense is. But then he said, you might as well say poverty is the security problem because that's causing all the instability we have to fight. And it's not a military responsibility to deal with poverty. And I don't disagree with that. But on the other hand, right when we were having that conversation, there were provincial reconstruction teams in Afghanistan and Iraq that had military members that were trying to deal with poverty in order to stabilize the situation. So we deal with these things. You know, we say it's not a military role, but sometimes it is. And figuring out what these challenges look like 20 years down the line is something that we're spending money on right now, today. So it's an interesting set of timelines. You know, one of the things I wonder about as we're talking too is the influence of the United States in the international system. It's a given, and it's not necessarily something that the rest of the world loves to talk about. But one of the things that really worries me is the sort of brittleness of our political system at the moment. We've proven to be a very resilient country ourselves politically over hundreds of years, but we seem to be at an unusual juncture. And, you know, the truth is that for the kinds of trends and influences and needs that we're talking about, how do you deal with these systemic level influences where it's gender and demographics and resources and military security all coming together? If you have this brittle, inflexible, and rigid political system that's not adapting and not moving, where does that leave us? That's definitely something that I worry about, both for the future of our country, but also of the United States' role in the world. You know, I know that lots of other people would say it isn't always a constructive role, but at bottom, it really is much of the time, and certainly there's a lot to be said for that. Are we going to be able to continue to play that role going forward, and are we going to be able to marshal what we need to at home?